Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Late Flag, the aftermatch podcast for the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back at Liverpool's 2-2 draw away yesterday, and it virtually signalled the end of our league title hopes, although it's not mathematically impossible. I think that it's been a bad week for Liverpool, and yesterday's drop to 2 points, I think, all but conceded that we wouldn't win the title this year, especially with today's results, with both Arsenal and the under-15ers winning. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and I'm joined tonight by Tom Keegan, Pete Warburton and Mike Wilson. So, Pete, I'll come to you first this time, because obviously you weren't on the podcast because you were at your retirement due Thursday when we did it. And obviously, we didn't get you to write down your team. So when the team was announced yesterday around about 11:30, there was 5 changes from the game at the pit early in the week. And I don't think any of the 5 players who were actually left out of the side could have any complaints. And in fact, you know, if we'd have perhaps had a couple of more players available, there perhaps could have been more than 5 changes, because it was an absolutely abysmal performance against Everton, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a surprise there was that many changes for 2 reasons. Obviously, playing 3 games in a week, if you start off with the Fulham game, and then obviously the Goodison Derby and yesterday. So it wasn't a surprise, but like you say, I think if the likes of Conor Bradley had been fit, and maybe a couple of others, there'd have been maybe, you know, 6 or 7 changes. So I was a little bit, not so much disappointed. I wasn't surprised about the changes, but I thought maybe Salah may have started ahead of Elliott, and I even thought Nunes may have started. But as you say, there were so many poor performances against Everton. You probably could have, you know, changed the whole bloody team, in fairness. You know, I just thought watching that Everton game was just, we just didn't look like a team that wanted to win the league, if that's the right term. I mean, we all want to win the league, but they just didn't apply themselves at all. And they just fell into the trap at Everton, that they played the occasion rather than the team in front of them. But yeah, going on to the West Ham game, I wasn't surprised with the changes. As I say, I thought maybe Mo would have started and possibly Darwin up front. Excuse me. But other than that, I could see Kwanzaa coming in at centre-back. And I think, you know, the back four or the back five with Ali in goal was more or less as I may have predicted on if it had been on the Everton review. So, yeah, it was a team capable of getting the 3 points. And as I say, it wasn't a surprise just because of the amount of football we've played in the last 8 days.
I think, Tom, for me, the team selection showed that we've been another forward option light all season, and a player who can play down the right in place of Mo, because, you know, I thought, you know, that neither Salah nor Nunes deserved a start yesterday after the performances against Everton. But when you thought about it, you only had Gakpo to bring back in because of Jota's injury. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says, Harvey Elliott is not a right-sided forward. Not in a million years. If you want to compete for trophies, if you want to compete at the highest level, then Harvey Elliott is never a right-sided forward. He's a midfield player who, with a nice left foot, who can create stuff. I still think he's better as a substitute. So seeing him up front sort of dented my confidence right away. But having said that, there wasn't a lot of alternative, because, you know, you either had to play him in midfield and then play one of Nunes and Salah, or do what you did. So what did you make of it, Tom?
Yeah, I'm more or less the team. We thought there'd be quite a lot of changes, Les. As a piece outlined, for the 3 games in 6 days, and for 2, as you say, that There were so many people who had such a poor game against Everton. There was bound to be changes. And as you say, there wasn't a great deal. With Jota being missing, I think that made a difference. You could have gone with Jota, you could have gone with Gakpo, and you could have gone with Diaz and left Salah and Nunes on the bench. But with Jota being out, it left us light there. And with Ben Doug being injured as well, I think it left you with not many alternatives. You could have put Curtis there, but he didn't deserve a place on his performance against Everton. So, yeah, to play Harvey there, he's just filling in, really, to be fair to the lad, isn't he? He doesn't really offer anything, which, you know, like he doesn't offer a lot of goals or a lot of pace out there. So it's a bit of a quandary when we haven't got anyone fit.
Yeah, Mike, what did you make of the start in 11? Because I know you're quite a fan of Harvey. Do you think he suits that position on the right hand side of a front three, or are you like me and think of him more as a midfield player?
Exactly that. I don't think he suits that. My wife and I sat around in the morning as we built up towards the game, having a coffee, and we picked the team. And I went for the team that he picked. The only one she talked about might have been Szoboszlai for Gravenbach, but I thought he deserved his game, especially after Fulham. I'm surprised he didn't get any minutes against Everton, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I love Harvey, but he doesn't have the pace. And I made the comment in our WhatsApp group, didn't I, that front line didn't have a huge amount of pace. Is it? The whole team didn't have a huge amount of pace. And that's kind of what worries me about him playing up there. I think he's a really good player. I think he's probably, when he plays for the England unders, he plays in the 10 role. And it really suits him, but we don't at the moment play with a 10. So yeah, it's not. But Mo didn't deserve his place, and Nunes didn't deserve his place. One thing that I found strange, and there might have been a good reason for it, is that there was no place in the squad for Dams. I thought maybe we should have had him on the bench, and to be honest, I'd have been happy if they threw him in. And then I'd Cody on one wing and Diaz on the other wing.
Yeah, fair shout that, Mike.
Just picking up on that. I know I said at the start, I'd have started with Salah and Nunes, and I know they were awful against Everton, as were the majority of the team, but I'd just thrown them in almost to say, Rice, you've fallen off your bike, bloody get back on it and show what you can do. And I just thought maybe leaving them on the bench and bringing them on later into the game yesterday. I don't know. I'd have started with them and just more or less said to them, right, prove to me what you can do, instead of the way you played the other night. And that's why I said to start them. Not because I think they deserve another start. Just almost like a backhanded get on the pitch and show me what you're there for, as opposed to sitting sulking on the bench for however many minutes it might take. But that was my reasoning behind it. I just thought there was quite a few that could have been dipped out from the derby because we were so poor all around the pitch. But for them two, I just thought against West Ham, I thought they'd have been a better pick, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a fair shout, Pete. We did start the game better. We had control of the game. It was very much, you know, a typical, you know, Liverpool keeping possession, trying to push them back, but not creating that much in the early part of the game. And West Ham were defending reasonably comfortably. Would you agree with that, please?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, for the first, as you said, the first few minutes, it was all Liverpool possession, but it was the same old story, wasn't it? Sometimes we start slowly and we actually concede a goal, but this time we kept possession, but we never threatened. I think Van Dijk had a shot resulting from a free kick, and he blazed it over the bar, and It was just our usual possession football where we were trying to pull them out, and we've known all, you know, we've seen it so many times this season when teams defend in a low block, we just don't have the wherewithal to get through them. And it was quite frustrating, to be honest. And it was boring. Can I use the word boring? I was watching the team of love and I was a bit cheesed off what they were doing. I just wanted to see if there was any penetration, someone to have a shot from outside the box and that. And it was just very tedious, I think, more than, but it was just a tedious watch, to be honest. I think Ryan Gravenberch, I think it was about 20 minutes, and Gravenberch had a half chance. I think he played a pass into the box, and he sort of wasn't a pass or a shot in the end. And I think the keeper came across, but it was all a bit tedious. And it was, I think at one point I put in our WhatsApp and said, why don't they just give the back four their own ball and let them play all day with it? Because that's what it felt like. Just felt like it was a Van Dijk to Kwanzaa and then over to Trent and then back again. And it just seemed to go on and on. And it was getting a little bit boring, to be honest.
Tom, you know, Pete's right there. It was very ponderous, wasn't it, to start Liverpool keeping possession. But like over the last few weeks, especially where people were commenting in the second half against Atlanta, you know, the passing of the ball at the back was really, really slow. You know, so see, you if you pass the ball slow, you're giving them more time, you know, to get set. You're not really pulling them out at all. So you'd have to make the passing more crisper. And when we did do that, we created, I would have said, a really decent chance for Harvey Elliott. And I thought he was an absolute, well, I thought he was a sitter that he missed when he hit and went into the side net. And I don't know whether you agree with that, but that was the real sum of the opening exchanges.
Yeah, I think that's been an underlying factor over the last probably about 15 games. Probably a little 15 might be a little bit longer, where we played this really slow passing of the ball, and as you say, it goes right across the back line. Teams give you that, the amount of time to be able to pass it. It's been something that's crept in. I think we were always quick with the ball, when we were always looking, moving the ball quickly. When we moved the ball quickly, we're a far superior team. And I don't know why we do it. It just seems to have snuck into our game. Yeah, I agree with what you said about Harvey's chance. I said to you later that I wouldn't sort of slag him for that one, because there was a defender to the side of him, there was a keeper, and he had not a great deal to aim at. It would have been an absolute beaut to go past the keeper and the defender and go into the corner, but he skewed it wide, really, didn't he? So I thought it was a chance that he, you know, like on another day, we might have put away, but with the way football has been going at the moment, I think you need the chances to be gilt-edged so we can put them away.
Mike, I think, I don't know about you, but when I watched it, you know, I'm thinking, you've hit it with your wrong foot, Harvey. What have you hit that with your right foot for? When, you know, just hit it with your left and put it in the opposite corner. And it was just, as Tom used the word, he sort of skewed his shot, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't think it was a left foot shot. He was coming across him. He was playing on the right wing. He was coming into the back post. You got to play those across the goal, haven't you? At least you might get a knockout or something like that. You got to play it across the goal. I didn't see. I saw that as a good chance, not a sitter. I wasn't. I mean, I've been a big critic of this. Messing about at the back, just passing between the two, and I said it before, a pair of mine is seeing the ball still at somebody's feet. I think Tom said we when we play with more energy, we play with more speed, we are better. But in the defenders, and I was a defender, so I'll from the defenders' union here, in their defence, you've got to have movement ahead of you. to find somebody to pass to. If there isn't that movement, and there hasn't been that movement, you know, you get Endo dropping too deep, so the ball is pointless, and there just hasn't been that movement. And you also need that turn of pace. That's why when Darwin was in form, we would be, you know, playing longer balls to him into the channels, and suddenly turning defence to attack. When Mo's in form, Virtual's got that diagonal ball that he plays to him. And those aren't options anymore. You know, we've talked about Harvey's pace on the right wing. You don't have that. And so it becomes ponderous. I thought it was far less ponderous than against Everton. I thought when you looked at West Ham's front four, that's quite a decent front four, and they were rubbish for most part. And we just let them get into the game, didn't they? By not, you know, attacking. You watch Arsenal today when they attack as a team, and they absolutely. And we used to do that. We used to have people in midfield leading the press. You don't have that at the moment, do we? So,
you know what else we've missed, Mike? You're talking about the Defenders Union. Have we missed Joel Matip carrying the ball out of defence?
He would carry it
20, 30 yards, and he would make teams, you know, he would find space. And it's a big miss with Joel being out the side that we haven't had that in our locker, to be honest.
I'll tell you what else we've missed, Pete, as well. Sadio Mane's pace over on the wide. I think Luis Diaz is a brilliant player. He's a fantastic player. He beats men and he doesn't, but he's not as direct.
I've got a theory on that, Tom, I'm gonna bring it up at the end of the game chat, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
but I've got a theory that I'd like all your opinions on, to be fair.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, we'll park it still a little bit later. So, Pete, it was just then typical Liverpool, wasn't it, where we didn't have a penalty shout, there would have been two penalties in there, and I think Taylor is about to give it. And then the linesman gives offside against Luis Diaz, which, when you looked at it, it was just offside. Yeah, but at the time it took them to make the decision was an absolute joke. Even with my red tinted glasses on, I'm looking at that and saying, "Yo, that's well offside." Too long, and it took about 2 minutes. And you know what the hell is going on? But more about the PGMOL later. But it was just sort of typical Liverpool that once again, you know, we've had the vast majority of pressure, we've had the vast majority of the ball, you know, we're looking the only team likely to score. They're sort of taking, you know, the chances from us being sloppy in possession and giving the ball away and then breaking. And then the same thing happens. You know, we're sloppy at the back. You know, we give them a corner. And Bowen somehow reacts quicker than Cody Gakpo. And all of a sudden, you know, we find ourselves 1-0 down in a game where you think, you know, how is this happening again?
I know. Well, Lucho hit the post, didn't he, a few minutes before that, when he cut inside and he hit the base of the post. And I thought, well, that's it, you know, half time 0-0, let's hope you get a cheer. And I don't know, you know, you look at the goals we conceded against Everton as well, and I think it's all down to this zonal marking. Like, I speak to our Jack when I'm watching the game with him, and he used to play at a decent level, our Jack. And he said that when if they have zonal marking, all they do is they just mark a square or whatever, you know, in the box. And it's almost like the passing responsibility on. And when you looked at the goal, like Bowen scored, there just didn't appear to be anyone who sort of tried to counter him at all. They just let him run into this space that was there. No one seemed to mark him. And it's like they are marking a space rather than a man. And I just think on set pieces, we've just gone to bits, to be honest. We look really, really susceptible on set pieces all the time, defending them.
Well, and by we do. The same- The zonal marking thing's a red herring, because in zonal marking you have every part of the goal covered, and ultimately there was somebody there who didn't do their job, and it's just the same as if they weren't marking their man. There's somebody who did not do their job.
It's like the Calvert-Lewin goal. Trent never even jumped the far post, but it's almost
just
like
out the way.
And I don't know. I mean, I remember the counter argument to this years ago. We were playing the zonal marking and people were having a go. And I think when we were under Rafa, we went so many hours without conceding a goal. Mm. If you remember, we went so many games, it was untrue. But I just think both on the offence, and I know one of our goals came from a corner, but it was very shabby. And I just think both defending and on the offensive side, I just think we've lost our way on set pieces and corners. Most of our corners don't beat the first man anyway. But I just thought it was very shambolic, the defending for Bowen's goal. I just thought, you know, I don't know. I know Mike's saying if you do zonal marking, it's a zone to mark. But I just wondered if there's times you've got to go man to man and be a bit more cute and block people on that. We just don't seem to be cute enough, to be honest.
I think you're spot on there. There's been lots of tactics for people using at corners, and that we try every year to win the Fair Play Award, and instead, you know, it's we're losing out. We don't do enough of that kind of
the dark arts, eh?
Yeah. I don't mean that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean diving or anything like that. Sensibly blocking people off so that you know Virgil can get a run at an attacking corner and stuff like that. We don't do it.
No.
Tom, so we go in a half time 1-0 down, which we should never have done. Were you expecting maybe at least one change, possibly a couple of changes? When they come out for the second half, and what changes were you expecting?
I thought he would give a little bit more time. On the Bowen goal, there's no way, you know, you can talk about zonal marking and you can talk about man marking. There's no way a 6'5" footballer should get out jumped by a 5'9" near forward. And that's what happened. He was standing still and Bowen got in between him. It's just poor, like it's been for most of the season. We're not picking people up. It's just poor defending. And when it comes to half time, I thought there'd be changes. I didn't think he'd make changes right away at half time, because we hadn't, as both the lads have said, I don't think we were that bad really. We created a couple of chances, but they hadn't really troubled us as much. Ali hadn't had to make many saves. So, like, you thought he'll probably give them another 10, 15 minutes, and then he usually makes his customary changes. But it's the second half, I thought we started a bit brighter than me, and we look like we've been, you know, like they've been moaned at in the dressing room, and he come out a bit more on the front foot.
Yeah, Mike, I did think we started the second half better, but it was different, as we said before. I thought he started to move the ball quicker, which then give us a bit more memento to take into the second half and to start to push them back. And we were also winning the second balls a lot more than we were doing in the first half. And ultimately then, we got the equalising goal with a bit of a scuff shot from Robbo. You know, I thought it had gone into the side net at first. I was delighted when I seen it nestling in the back of the net. But the equaliser was no more than we deserved at the start of that second half.
Yeah, I unfortunately missed it because I had an Amazon delivery, so I had to go and so I missed it live. Came in to see Robbo running away, and I'm just, as you do with every goal, I'm waiting for the VAR decision to ratify the goal or not. But it was a far better start to the... Well, it was far better half, really. you know, I mean, we bossed that half. You look at the number of chances in that in that half. At the end of the game, I looked before. They'd had 10 chances. We had 22 in the whole game, and I reckon 17 of them came in that second half. Yeah. So we were, you know, we were very definitely up for it. It's like we had a bit of a roasting in the first half. Like Tom, I didn't think there'd be any. Jürgen doesn't tend to get panicked in. If we'd gone in two behind, he might have made some changes, but I expected him to wait till close to the hour.
Yeah, Pete, it was much better in the second half, wasn't it? You felt that, you know, we were going to score, or we'd have an opportunity to score most times we went forward, really. You know, Gakpo started to get in the game more. Gravenberch continued his good form from the first half. Elliot was getting involved a little bit more. Endo was, you know, was pushing up a bit more and snapping into them. And all in all, it was much better. And then we scored a lucky, we have to say, it was a 14th second goal when, you know, Cody sort of scuffed his efforts and it went in off one of the West Ham defenders. And all of a sudden, you know, we're 2-1 up and you're thinking, now, come on, let's sort of build on this lead. Let's get another one. And let's put this game to bed. So what did you make of the second goal?
Well, the second goal, I felt a bit sorry that they actually awarded the own goal to the keeper. Because
the ping pong bongo.
Yeah. If every time a goalkeeper got a portion of his body to it as a ball going on the way into the net, there'd be loads of own goals. I felt a bit, I didn't feel sorry for him because it was a goal for us, but I thought whoever makes these awards, whoever decides was the own goal, I thought it was more likely to be the second deflection, really. But once again, it was a scuff shot, and it's something we've spoken about for the last few weeks now. We just get chance after chance. Like you say, Robbo's goal, it wasn't sweetly hit. And just before Robbo scored, I think Ryan Gravenberch had a great chance and he blazed it over the bar as well. But like you say, it just infuriates me the way they come out for the second half after being so passive in the first half. You just want to start games like that. You know, and I mean, that's another subject, but second half was literally 100% better. I was of the opinion at half-time, I thought, when I'm doing the podcast tomorrow, I'm not even going to even nominate a man of the match because none of them deserve it because we've been so passive. But the second goal was scruffy, as I say. The shot was flying probably out for a goal kick or even a throw-in, the angle of it. And then it takes two deflections and goes in. And at that stage, you think, right, you know, we've got our noses in front. Let's keep strong and everything and get a third. And it's just one of those that we were still playing better, we were still playing well, but we just couldn't force that third goal that would have seen us home, you know.
Yeah, Tom. So we get the lead and, you know, you see that, you know, Liverpool are about to make three substitutions with Mo and Nunes among them coming on. And you think, you know, that's going to be the right move because they'll be starting to push up now. They'll be looking to try and get the equaliser. And hopefully with the added pace of Mo and Nunes, you know, we'll be able to capitalise on them pushing up and get a third goal. And then lo and behold, before they can get on, you know, again, we failed to stop a cross coming in from the left-hand side. The centre forward, you know, loses Kwanzaa in the box. You know, he drops off him. There's a really good cross that comes in. And, you know, he buries the header. And you think to yourself, not again. Here we go again. You know, another stupid goal conceded. And, you know, now we've got to go and try and win the game again. So what did you make of the goal?
Also, it was a, do you know what? It started off with the error, as always. And then when it goes out wide, the amount of time he had to pick his cross, which was so disappointing, as you said, fair play to him. Once he got the time to take the cross, You know, he picked out Antonio. It was a brilliant cross in, and to be fair to Antonio, a brilliant header. Not many times do you see Ali rooted to the spot. Well, you know, while a goal goes in, no, he had no chance of getting it. But it was a sucker, wasn't it? It was just, you know, we played so well, created so much, and they'd had so little, and then the issues with it as. Like as most teams seem to do in this second half of the season, hit us and catch us, and then the next thing it's 2-2, and you're thinking, oh, we've got to fight there. You know, like now we've got to try and find a way to find a winner from a position where, as you said, we were looking to bring three players on to push for the third goal while we had them on the break. You know, but just like Liverpool at the moment, things don't seem to go to plan.
Mike, I couldn't believe the one thing that shocked me when you know, when the substitutions were made, that Luis Diaz was one of the players replaced. And I thought that he was, you know, he was having a decent game, I thought. I thought he was looking dangerous, you know, when he was on the ball. So, you know, to take him off, I thought it was a real, really strange decision. I don't know what you made of it.
I thought that was mad. I thought at that point in time, he was still probably the biggest threat for us. I would probably only have replaced Harvey at that point in the forward line. I would have left Gakpo and Diaz both on. Now, whether that would be replacing him with Nunes or Mo, I don't know. But I would have kept Diaz on.
Yeah. So then, you know, we're pushing to try and get the winner, Pete. You know, there's a few scrambles here and there. You know, Mo and Nunes have a break, and you know, really good defending by the centre half, and somehow Anthony Taylor and his liner decide that it's a goal kick and not a corner to us. You know, again, we have another break with Mo, and he's trying to play Nunes in again, and he plays a bad pass, but the ball, you know, breaks to Harvey, who has a real decent effort from the edge of the box, and it hits the crossbar. And then we come to one of the most bizarre incidents I think I've seen in my time watching the game, where there doesn't seem to be a foul on the keeper. You know, Taylor doesn't give a foul. Everybody pushes up. The keeper rolls the ball forward as though he's going to kick it. He then sort of messes with his socks. Gakpo's running forward, just about to make contact with the ball. And Taylor blows his whistle to stop him. He then goes up to the goalkeeper and basically telling him to sit down. He then calls on the trainer for treatment. The goalkeeper still hasn't sat down. The trainer then, or physio, if you want to call him that, then makes the keeper sit down while he has treatment. And then, bizarrely, Taylor then restarts the game with the drop ball. I mean, what the hell was he doing? Again, it's another calamitous decision by the PGMOL. Absolutely calamitous. And, you know, I text you all after the game and told you exactly what they would say in their excuse, and basically word for word to come out. Exactly what
you
said.
I mean, just going back to the start of that, like we were talking, well, like I brought up earlier about us being too soft, just put the ball in the bloody net. I mean, like you say,
before Cody got there twice.
But he waved play on, didn't he?
He did, but before Cody had a chance to kick the ball, if you listen, he blows the whistle twice.
Yeah.
So that's why Cody stops. He doesn't stop for any other reason other than Taylor's blowing the whistle, because Cody's thinking, if I put the ball in the net now, I'll get booked. So he's blew his whistle twice. There's no, but the point is, why has he blown his whistle? That's the thing.
I don't understand it. I really don't understand why he's come to that conclusion. When he's you can see in the replays, you can see him with his hand up in the air as to say, play on, play on. And then for some unknown reason, when the keeper loses concentration and puts the ball down, I don't know if the keeper thought he'd given a free kick or something, but it was evident that it was play on. I mean, the only thing I can remember going back, some of you lads should remember, it wasn't actually the same, but I went down to West Brom one year and we played awful at West Brom. And Tony Godden, who was the keeper then, he put the ball down from open play. And he had it when goalkeepers could do what the hell he wanted, which is getting back to that almost now. But he put it down on the ground and he didn't know Kenny was standing right behind him. And Kenny Dalglish runs around and bangs the ball in the net. Now, it's sort of the same thing, apart from the fact that he blew the whistle before Cody got a chance to put it in. But if I just don't understand where he was coming from. And like you say, he more or less went up to the keeper and told the keeper, look, and that was to save his embarrassments, I'm sure it was, because he'd certainly waved play on, and there was no foul, there was no head injury or anything like that, and he'd waved it on. So once again, it's just, I don't know, it just I'm just bemused by some of the decisions that the officials make. And I don't know, it just sort of summed up the game again for us yesterday, that we hit the bar, we hit the post in the first half, Harvey hit the bar second half, and you just thought, now it's not gonna be our day. And then when they equalized, Antonio equalized with like 15 minutes to go, and we just couldn't force the winner, you just wondered, it's not gonna be our time, sort of thing.
Tom, what did you make of that incident? I'm
Oh,
sure.
just bizarre, Les. It was absolutely bizarre, wasn't it? You summed it up absolutely perfectly. But I like Peter. Even though he blew the whistle, I would have put the ball in the net if I'd have been Gapco. Even if he
Once
was
he blew
gonna,
the whistle.
even if he was gonna blow up, and then they'd have to have a look at it, surely.
He
They
wouldn't. He
can't.
could. He
It's the
can't.
ball's dead.
Yeah, as
The
soon as he
moment the
blows the
whistle
whistle,
goes, it's
ball's
dead.
dead. So even if Gakpo would have put the ball in the net, it wouldn't have been referred to VAR because he's blew the whistle before the
So he's
ball
got
hit there.
away with that then, Les, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Basically, he's got away with it because you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen to the audio. They're not going to release the audio what he said to the keeper.
No, but they should do.
Nobody won't.
Because what he's speaking to the keeper about is trying to cover his own back.
Of course he is, but when you watch the video that was going around where he's run away, you can see him utterly panic when Gapco starts running towards the ball. He literally panics and blows the whistle. It's just, do you know what? It's just been every single podcast we were on, we're talking about it, like a really big decision. That's cocked up yet another game. It's every single game. Do you know, like there's got to be a point where we come to a point where they say, you know what? And I don't even think, do you know what, Les? I don't even think it's VAR. I think the officials are that bad. I really do. I think, it just. I don't want to use the word corrupt because if I thought that, if I thought that the officials were corrupt, that'd be the end of football for us, really, would it? What's the point if your officials are corrupt? But so you'd have to say, well, they're not corrupt, but they're like incompetent. But he's supposed to be, like he's supposed to be the top referee in the country. And he's probably one of the top referees in Europe. If that's one of
Tom.
the top, yeah.
Do you think it's VAR that's caused this, that the referees and the liners are so bad because they think
Yeah.
they'll just be. It's a cop out for them, and they're not
It's
doing the
part.
job
It's
properly.
part. I definitely, Peter. I don't think they referee the game anymore.
No, they
I
don't.
don't.
But
I think
the thing is, lads,
they wait for VAR to do it for
VAR
them.
don't give the VAR don't sort of correct the bad decisions, do they? Because they look at them and they think, oh yeah. It's like I said to you, Tom, when we were having a chat. You give me a call last night, we were having a chat. And this scenario sort of reminds me of what VAR is, right? So you're doing a maths exam, right? And you've got an earpiece in, and you've got somebody with a camera watching what you're doing. And if you're doing a calculation, they're going down and saying, right, yeah, that calculation, right, he's doing that all right so far. Good, good, good. And then you get to a point in your calculation and you go wrong in your calculation. And the person knows who's watching you that you've gone wrong. But he sits there and he thinks, oh, you know, Les has gone wrong there in that calculation. I understand how he's gone wrong. So I'll just let that go. And then afterwards, it gets marked wrong because you haven't corrected it and you've gone wrong. But although the fella who's there to help you has looked at it and thought, yeah, I understand why you've got that answer, even though it's the wrong answer. And that's what happened with Barmy.
Les, at least today they did have the balls to stand up to Oliver and say, you've cocked up at Tottenham.
Yeah.
When Rice went right. I mean, how he didn't give that, I'll never know. He was about 3 yards away.
Yeah.
And at least they pulled him up on that and said, you better go to the monitor.
Yeah,
That's the problem that they don't.
That's what I'm saying about officials are just sort of, you know, I don't know how much whack they get. I don't know what payment, but the linesmen, to me, all the linesmen do these days is give throw-ins. The ins and outs, as they called it in the kids' football, you know. They don't make a decision.
I think a big part of this is the fact that the laws are wrong. The laws are rubbish. They're too subjective. There's too often where people say, well, both decisions would have been okay there, but you can't have that.
You'll never have consistency
if you've got a situation where you can have both decisions. But looking at that incident yesterday, if you step through it, it's embarrassing, isn't it? First of all, it wasn't a foul on the goalkeeper. No. It wasn't a foul. His defender touched him more than Cody did. He landed down perfectly fine. He wasted time, right? He wasted time. That's all he was intending to do. He wasted time. So he then held on to the ball for 26 seconds. Now, we know they don't apply the 6-second rule, but 26 seconds is either a booking or advantage over. You cannot have it either way. It's a booking or advantage over, right? So under no circumstances can he possibly blow that whistle there. But he did. And do you know what? If he thought that might be advantage over, he should have waited, let Cody score, and then go, but I thought that was a foul. So let VAR tell me whether it was a foul or not. He didn't do that. So that, but then he went and he insisted the.
Think he could have gone back. I don't think he could have gone back and said, oh, I need you to, because once the goalkeepers dropped that ball, then we're in a new phase of play.
And VAR wouldn't have overturned it. You're absolutely right. And what's more. The whole premise that he then goes up to the keeper and says, well, I've screwed up here. I'm going to pretend he needed treatment. Keeper looks at him astonished. What's that all about? And then Match of the Day showed it, didn't they? Their physio was nowhere near his physio's back. He didn't think for 1 minute he was injured, so he had to run and get that. Then they restarted it with a drop ball. So. Exactly. So it's a catalogue of errors that all started from him wrongly awarding a free kick or thinking it was a free kick when it just wasn't. It just felt like he had decided Liverpool weren't going to benefit from this.
But you know, he never indicated the free kick at all, Mike, did he?
No.
He didn't. But, he run away.
But there is a signal. There is a signal.
Play on.
There is a signal that says advantage. There are two refs on Twitter, Keith Hackett and one other, have both said he raised his arm in the way that signals that he's playing advantage, which suggests that he thinks he's seen a foul, but he's playing advantage. But that advantage cannot last 26 seconds.
No, you're exactly right. Go on, please.
Yeah. I was just saying it's probably a subject for another debate, maybe in the close season. We'll have to have a, programme about how we'd like to tighten up certain things in the game. But I just, as I say, I always get back to us being a soft touch. And I don't know, if I was Cody, I'd have just banged the ball in the net and suffered the consequences.
He'd have got a yellow card, wouldn't he?
Yeah. For that, though, I mean, that would have been, that would have been absolutely, I don't know. And I was fuming, actually, watching it, thinking, and I was screaming at the telly, put the ball in, put the ball in. As I say, there's been a couple of instances over the years. I remember, not the same, because it wasn't down to the referee doing it, but as I say, I remember Kenny doing it at West Brom.
Do you remember a game?
Gary Crosby against Sissy? Yeah.
I can't remember who it was against at Anfield. Right, and I'm almost certain Anthony Taylor was the referee. But it's a game that you might remember the game when I tell you about the incident. I think Lallana scores for Liverpool, and it was a game that Liverpool won 1-0. And I think it might have been, I don't know whether it was the year.
Wolves.
Was it Wolves at home? Yeah, it was. It was the game that Neto also got the goal disallowed, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was Mane who scored from a Lallana shoulder.
Yeah, that's and it went to VAR, and VAR had to check whether the referee had blew his whistle before the ball crossed the line. Because if the referee had blown his whistle, then as Mike said before, the game is stopped. So I purposely listened yesterday to the playback, and Taylor does blow his whistle twice, just as Cody is getting into his stride to do what he's gonna do, and Cody just stops. So Cody's got nowhere to go once he blows his whistle, as Mike said, the game is stopped. But I think both Mike and Tom and yourself have described that absolutely perfectly, because by what Taylor did yesterday, does that mean that any time a team's got advantage, if they play a bad pass in that advantage, that one of their team can just pick the ball up and say, okay, ref, we'll go back now and we'll have the free kick. No, you can't.
They did already this season, Gabriel.
Yeah.
When he picked it up in the box, he picked it up.
That was a slightly different scenario, because it's up to the ref to decide when the ball is live on that situation.
That was they've always got an answer, mate.
Yeah.
They've always got an answer for it. You know, like when they cock up, they just, and that's what they, and then what happens then? The media, like the likes of, like, the pundits come out and start gaslighting all supporters. Supporters don't understand what's going on. You know, we're just plebs who don't understand the game. It's killing the game. It's absolutely killing the game.
Killing the enjoyment, certainly.
It certainly is. See, Sweden's through it out.
Yeah.
For next season.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
Let's see what happens. I mean, they're bringing the semi-auto, aren't they, next season?
Yeah,
let's see
what happens. That wouldn't have helped today, but
let's see if it'll... I mean, there's been a couple of offsides lately where the lines have merged, and I think, like Mike said, the rules are stupid. They've got to just simplify the rules.
Semi-automatic, Pete, will take away the tolerance level. So, for example, they said on Wednesday that if semi-automated would have been in, right, the Everton's first goal would have been disallowed. So would Jota's last week at Fulham. So it takes away. So that tolerance was brought in, wasn't it, basically, to stop goals like the one that Henderson scored when Manny was offside in the derby. So that would be given a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But semi-automated that comes in takes the benefit of doubt away, and there's no tolerance level. So we'll have to see, basically, how that works. But
It will be quicker, though, won't it? And there aren't that many that are that close. The fact that it'll be much quicker, you know, you won't have people got back to the centre spot for kickoff, standing still for 5 minutes.
So,
yeah,
especially close ones, Mike.
So basically, the Diaz one, for example, you wouldn't have had the messing about with.
Yeah, you'd have got that quickly.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
You got it right as well.
That's what I mean. I noticed, by the way, just on that, he's been sort of slipped back in quietly, hasn't he? He refereed the Everton game yesterday, and he shouldn't be anywhere near it. He shouldn't have been anywhere near a Premier League game, either as fourth official VAR or on-field referee, for at least the season after next, because that error was catastrophic. And just one thing I want to say, lads, before we finish off on this one, is that do you think, with what you've all said today, and, you know, we've had the incident with Macken and Doku. We had the Diaz goal disallowed at Tottenham. We had the basketball at Anfield with Odegaard. None of them were given. You know, do you think that basically the PGML have sort of said, right, Liverpool can't lose this league by 2 points or less, because if they do, the focus will be on us.
I think it's probably more than the couple of points you talk about. I think there's been that many decisions over the season that have gone against us. But in saying that, I think we were talking pre-thingy, Mike was mentioning, it's our own bloody prophecy that we're in this position. We waste so many chances. And you can blame refereeing decisions all you want. But at the same token, have a look at some of the misses that we've done this season. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think there was a league table of who profited and who didn't from VAR. And as usual, we're one of the ones near the bottom where we've been hard done to, if you want.
But, we have been under Klopp's tenure, haven't we, most of the time?
Yeah, but as I say, you look at some of even just the recent games, Crystal Palace. I mean, even Everton, as poor as we were, we had chances to score. And we, you know, it's our own bloody, our own profligacy that's put us in this position. You know, even against West Ham yesterday, we scored two goals. That Robbo's was like a back pass, really. And the second goal was like Tom said, it was like a pinball, because the initial shot was way off target. So, you know, we'll have a sit down at the end of the season, I'm sure, and we'll go over, you know, a review. But you look at some of the misses we've had, and like Mike was saying, you know, Haaland comes on, has one chance and puts it away. And that's been our letdown this season.
Those VAR stats you're quoting there, Pete, they're pointless, because they're things that VAR's probably got right. The ones that we don't see are the Odegaard, the Doku, Jackson.
It was taking those into account. I think it was more not so much the decisions made. I mean, who's to say if Odegaard had been penalised, not necessarily score the penalty. We could have missed the penalty. So you can't necessarily say it cost us 2 points in that game. Because
it's highly likely that it cost us 2 points, though.
Yeah, you know, you could turn around and say the number of times you've had decisions against us, certainly some of them would have gone our way, even so. But, I don't know, it's just frustrating. But as I say, I'll always come back to the fact that we miss so many chances. We create so many chances, even when we're playing badly. As I say, the Everton game was point in case. I thought we were poor all over the pitch, and yet we had numerous chances, especially in that first half, to score, and we just couldn't put the ball away. So we can moan all we want about officials and refereeing decisions and luck and everything else, but we've just got to sharpen up in front of goal when we get the chances.
Tom, I'll go to you. Who was your player of the match yesterday?
Oh, Luis Diaz, Les. I'm not even going to... I thought Gavin Bates had a good game yesterday. I've been impressed with him the last two games. You know, maybe now we'll start to see the best of Ryan Gavin Bates. I thought he played well. Yeah, so I'll give it to Luis Diaz.
Mike?
Those are the two that I was thinking. I don't think Andy Robertson was that bad. I think he tried really hard, but not 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 great. And so, you know, but I'd give it to Graham Birch because I thought he was the one in the midfield that was probably trying to get forward most. I mean, McAllister wasn't his. He's had some bad games recently, but that wasn't his bad. He was all right. But I'd give it to Graham Birch.
Peace.
Yeah, I thought both the Dutch lads in periods of the game played well. I thought Gakpo had little periods of good play. Gravenberch, like you say. I thought Robbo came out at the start of the second half and really sort of drove us on, and he got the goal, albeit, you know, lucky in a way. But I'd probably stick with Diaz, and I was surprised when Diaz got substituted because I thought he was our main threat, to be honest.
Yeah, so we're going to have the same score here as the match because I'm with Mike. I'm giving Ryan Gravenberch my man of the match. I thought he was bright all the way through. I thought he was the one playing in the first half, really. He was trying to drive forward and do something. He worked hard, and overall, I thought he was a second decent performance on the bounce from him after his good performance, you know, against Fulham the week before. So I give it to Ryan Gravenberch. Right. Now, I'll come to you, Tom, first on this one. The Mo Salah incident when he was with Jurgen Klopp. What did you make of it?
I think it's quite sad, really, isn't it, Les? I think even if he has got a grievance and he feels hard done to, and he thinks that he deserves, he should have been on earlier, then I think to show that much disrespect to your manager, I think is not good. I think it reflects badly on Mo, and I think it's quite a sad end to Jurgen Klopp's tenure. I think that you're hearing stories coming out now that, you know, like the because players are not playing, that they're unsettled, and it's not. I don't think it was right. I think Mo should apologise for what he said, especially as Jurgen had said it was over, and in the dressing room he finished. I don't know if Mo was making a flippant remark as he walked through, but flippant or not, I think it was a bad thing that he'd done. And I think nobody is bigger than the club, and I think he was out of order.
Mike?
We do it there, don't we? James Milner fell out with the manager on the Olympic Stadium and the London Stadium, didn't he? It happens. I've seen Mane fall out a little bit with Klopp. I've seen De Bruyne have a right go at Pep this season. It happens. I agree with Pete a little bit about the disrespect. It's not nice. Mo's a legend, and to see it end this way, which I think it probably will be ending this summer this way, is very sad. I don't. It's just what happens in football. This I'm not a big one for digging too much into this.
Right, Pete.
Yeah, it is going to end certainly one way, even if Mo stays, because Jurgen's going. But I don't know, it could be a culmination of things. As we said, we started off the week with the 3-1 win at Fulham. And then I think the disappointments of the derby, the certainly personal disappointments of players, you know, the way they played themselves. And then possibly wanting to get on the pitch sooner. And as they were, I think as they were warming up, or they were literally waiting to come on. Like Mike said, when there was the fallout, was it a couple of seasons ago at West Ham when James Milner had a bit of a fallout? We actually scored, and yesterday it was the other way, wasn't it? West Ham scored. And I just think it was a culmination of things. I think maybe disrespect from either party might be the wrong word. I think it might just be down to frustrations, and you could see, you know, the chance of staying, you know, near the top of the league, ebbing away, especially when the goal went in. But I think Mo made some remark coming through after the game, didn't he, saying if I speak, there'll be a fire or something of that nature, whatever he meant by that. So whether we'll actually know the real reason, but whatever walk of life you're in, you can't disrespect your manager, whether you think you're right or wrong. The manager always wins because he's the one who can hire and fire. So I think there should have been a little bit of common sense, maybe. And as I say, I think we were all just frustrated. The fans were frustrated. and certainly the players were, to think that we got back to 2-2, and then we had to go out and try and win the game again. And I think maybe from both parties, things might have been said that we regretted, really, you know.
Yeah, from my point of view, you know, as someone who was brought up, you know, in the Shankly era, it wouldn't have happened. A player wouldn't have done that to Shanks. Although there was a famous incident where Roger Hunt threw his shirt on the floor when he was substituted once.
Oh, wonders.
Yeah, and that was quickly resolved by Shankly. And as I say, you know, I can't ever remember it happening under Bob Paisley. So, you know, if Mo had a gripe with Jürgen, it should have been done in the privacy of the dressing room or the AXA, and he shouldn't have did what he did, you know, before he come on, and then he shouldn't have made any remarks when he was walking through the mix zone at the end of the game, which is basically added fuel to the fire after Jürgen had said, you know, that everything had been sorted in the dressing room. So not only has he disrespected Jürgen, you know, in the actual stadium, he's then basically, you know, called him a liar because he's basically let himself know it hasn't been sorted. So I do think you need to apologise, Mo. You know, Jürgen's got, you know, 3 games left now as Liverpool manager. You know, let's sort of all stick together. 2 legends of the club. You know, we don't want you falling out. So issue an apology. Let's move on and let it sort of be one of those things to sort of, you know, as we always used to say in Liverpool, today's news is tomorrow's chip paper. So let's get on with that. Tom, come to you on this next bit. I said we was going to sort of mention this sort of later in the pod, something you mentioned before. And I was watching today's game between Arsenal and Tottenham, and also then I watched the 115 as a Forest. And the one thing I noticed when I watched both of those games was both of those teams now have ditched the inverted fullback. So, and I just wondered whether when Trent plays and he goes inverted, right, that he then puts too much pressure on the player playing right side at centre back, and also the player playing on the left then can't play as a natural left back, so they're getting them more opportunities to cross the ball at us because the left back can't get out quick enough to close down the attacking player who's got the ball. I just wondered on your, and I think for one, sorry Tom, that the inverted thing should be scrapped. I don't like it at all.
I think it's more or less, yeah. I think it's come to, I didn't know Manchester City had stopped playing it, but I don't think Arsenal play it that often, do they, to be honest?
No, not anymore. Now that they've
just started it, yeah. But you know, they remind me. I think we should scrap the inverted role, Les. I think we should go back to try and be more solid at the back with a solid back four. I think it's funny. I look at Arsenal and think they've copied exactly what we were. You know what? Under they remind me so much of Liverpool when we started off. You know, in the 2000s when Mane came and Salah. And we had Bobby playing as the false nine when they were all young. And that I think that's how they play their football. They're very similar. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I think we should definitely go back to, you know, with Trent at right back. If he's going to play right back, or if the new manager comes in and moves him into midfield, he should go to midfield. But he shouldn't be. I think the inverted role's been found out. We're getting exploited down in the space all the time.
Mike, what do you reckon?
I think we rush to do it too early in games. I do think, and I do think it's probably had an impact on Mo's role, because if there isn't a right back going down the wing, then he spends more of his time wide than he does trying to get forward. I think there are times in games. I remember that when we played Arsenal last season and we came back and Trent eventually delivered the cross for Bobby to equalise in the 2-2 draw. I think he came inside and played really, really well in that game. But we do it as a matter of course, where and maybe that's why more recently we've played a little bit better as a team with Connor Bradley at right back, who did it occasionally, but his kind of meandering was more forward than inside, and so I just think we need to do it less. I'm not saying we should never do it, but we need to do it less. We need to stop doing it all the time. You know, he's playing sweeper half the time, is Trent, and it doesn't work. Either that, or one thing I can see now is you know, new manager comes in, he might move Trent forward, and he might see the value of Conor Bradley, and maybe that's the time to do it.
Yeah,
Pete. Just one thing I wanted to sort of say to you to back up what the lads have said there is sometimes when our right centre back has got the ball and the centre backs are playing the ball to each other, obviously, sometimes you're looking to play the ball out to the right to where your right back is, and he's not there, he's gone into the midfield, and that option's gone, so he then has to go back and play it again. His opposite centre back, and I think when you look back at the equalising goal when Kwanzaa gives the ball away to Fernandez, he looks to play the ball out to the right. There's nobody there, so he comes back and under it is passed to Virgil, and then that's when Fernandez scored the goal. And I think when I'm watching Liverpool play, especially the away games, when I'm watching it on telly, that seems obvious to me that we haven't got a ball out to the right back. And Mike's quite right. That then impacts on whoever's playing as the right-sided forward.
Yeah, and it's to be honest, everyone when we first started doing it was like some innovative thing. But I think other clubs were doing it, and they were just calling it the Trent role, weren't they? But in fairness, I've seen Robert playing inverted as well, and almost playing centre forward. But I just think we've been found out now. The number of teams that are trying this is with diagonals. When we've lost possession high up the pitch, and then the first thing they do is they try a diagonal to either if Robbo's AWOL or whether it's Trent or even Connor. But I just think, going back to what Tom said about Arsenal, I think Arsenal's strength this season has been the fact that they've tightened up defensively, because this time last season they threw games away at Nottingham Forest. They lost points. I can't remember. There was other games that they should have won. Right in the home where they got trounced in the end because they were pushing forward. And I think what Arteta has been very clever this season, and he's really got them tight at the back. And I think we've just gone possibly, you know, when it works for us, it looks great, but we have been found out.
We do leave big gaps there, don't we? And that's what you were saying about when the space... There's space over there all the time. So you're stretching right away. You're pulling one of the centre backs over out of position.
Yeah. I think Slot plays with the back four of Feyenoord, doesn't he? I'm not too sure. I've not really looked at the Dutch 4-2-3-1, league.
4-2-3-1, I believe.
Yeah. So he's probably going to be. So if he plays that formation that Mike's just said, there may be no call to have inverted fullbacks if we have a nice base at the back of a back four. And I don't mean go ultra defensive by any means, but I mean at least be steady at the back. Whereas we are open to a lot of counter attacking, and we have been hurt a few times this season because both or either fullbacks have gone so far up the pitch. You know,
if we become tighter at the back, Les, you know, you made a good point there. If we become tighter, and Peter, then if we become tighter at the back, then we have got the expansive players who can hurt loads of teams. We've got loads of players. We were creative enough, and we've got players who can sit in front in the two. You know, we've got a brilliant playmaker, and we've got somebody who's going to be defensive. So I think that's a good thing. Maybe it's time for the change. I don't know.
Do you think? Yeah. I mean, looking at, you know, as I said before, I watched both the games today, and both Arsenal and City, they basically play 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Right. And I just wonder whether that's the way forward now. Because Liverpool, and the other thing I wanted to ask you, if, you know, I think if we're all honest, we'd all expect motor go at the end of the season. But under the new manager, if Mo is to stay, would you sort of consider playing him as a 10 rather than in a 4-2-3-1 formation, rather than him playing in the wide positions?
I'd prefer Mo down the middle now. I'd prefer Mo down the middle in the front three. I've penciled in a team, I think, that, you know, for the Spurs game, I'd have Diaz and Nunes wider, and I'd have Mo down the middle.
In the centre of a three?
What I'm talking about is not playing him centre forward.
Yeah.
I'm talking about playing him as like a number 10. In the new, forget about Tottenham for now, because we'll discuss that sort of in a new pod during the week. But under the new manager, if he does stick to his 4-2-3-1 formation, and Mo sort of stays.
So who's going to play the one, he's saying? Yeah.
No, he would play in the 10 behind the
one. He'd play in the 10 in the middle.
Right. So what did you say was 4-2-3? We're getting all thingy now. It's like countdown.
4-2-3-1. He would play in the middle of the three.
With
Nunes as the 9. So Mo would play as the 10.
Chiazza as the 9.
I think you need whoever's playing up the top of the Christmas tree, whatever you want to call it. I think you need a bit of.
We're calling it Christmas as we're in March, just coming into March, into May. We'll call it the Christmas tree.
Hey Tom, there's still lights up in Birkenhead. I can tell you that for nothing. Still lights up in Birkenhead.
The Christmas tree.
Yeah, I think whoever is the one up top, I think they need a bit of physicality about them. They need to, I'm not saying they need to be 6'8" and 20 stone, but they need to have a bit about them. Yeah, I don't know how this lad plays for Feyenoord. I don't know. I mean, they're obviously not a bad side, and I don't know any of the players for Feyenoord, to be honest.
The journalists who write about him, and Van Basten done an article about him, everybody that talks about him moves the ball really quickly.
His player
has a tight defence and he moves the ball quickly. And there's a lot of movement in his team.
The other thing we can't sort of foresee is we're talking about current personnel, and there will be players going this summer.
Yeah,
that's the way football is. So, you know, you know the likes of Mo might stay. I don't know. He might go. The likes of Thiago is going to go. We just have to see, you know, which players leave and what type of player he brings in as well.
I can't see any benefit in Liverpool keeping Mo, because he's not going to sign a new contract. So we're going to lose him for nothing. His form's poor. And at this moment in time, we might get 70,000 or 80,000 from Saudi for us, 80 million for him.
Yeah.
From Saudi. I can't see, as much as I love him and he's a legend, I cannot see any benefit to keeping him.
The only thing I will say to you answer that question is Mo might decide that he wants to stay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we could accept bids from Tom, Dick or Harry. And if he doesn't want to go, then he won't go. And if he does go, it could be that Liverpool would have to pay him off, if you see what I mean. So his agent would be in and say, Mo is prepared to say he's on 350 grand a week. So if you want to sell him, he will go, but you have to give him X amount of money to go. And then
that happens most sales, doesn't it? It does. That was most sales. The only reason I quote 70 or 80 is because I've heard lots of journalists saying that there will be in Saudi, because he would be seen as such a catch, there will be bidding wars for him.
I think if that was the case, they'd bite their hand off, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Especially with Edwards and Hughes in complete control. I think if somebody comes in with a silly place for Mo, as Les says, whether he wants to go is another matter.
Right, lads, just before we finish the pod, right, it's 4 years today since former Reds legend Michael Robinson passed away. You know, a member of our team that won the treble under Joe Fagan. Tom, what's your memories of Michael as a player?
Well, he was a decent player, Les, wasn't he? Come, you know, like he, and a likeable lad as well. He was a decent, really decent player.
He'd give us all, didn't he, Pete?
Yeah.
I remember he scored on his Derby debut, and there was also, would you believe, I think he scored a hat-trick against West Ham, which
he
is
did,
quite
yeah.
good since we're, yeah. since we're talking about, you know, the game against West Ham yesterday.
Yeah, I think he was such a hard-working lad, and he was a big lad up front, but he was powerful when he ran at defences. You know, he was a powerful lad, and probably by his own admission, he wasn't the most skillful player, but by God, he made up for it in effort.
Yes.
And I thought he was a cracking addition to the squad. Probably a few eyebrows were raised when we went in for him because he wasn't like, you know, a top, you know, top player, if you want. But, you know, sometimes these players come in who you don't expect, type of, you know, Liverpool player, and they come in and they're a revelation. And,
yeah.
you know, he was always probably thinking in the back of his mind he'd be playing second fiddle. You know, he won't be first pick, but I tell you what, he was a cracking player, Michael Robinson, and as I say, he's a big loss. He was only a young fellow when he died, and he went on to Spain, didn't he, and carved out a great career in Spain.
Mike, you know, he was a bit of a cult hero with the Cop, wasn't he? Because I can remember, you know, standing on the Cop back in the day when he played, and, you know, they always used to sing, you know, the players' names before kick-off, you know, while they were warming up, and he used to sing to Michael, "There's only one Fatty Robbo," and he took it all in good style, and he used to lift his shirt up and tap his belly. You know what I mean? But he was a really, as Pete said, he was a really valuable member of the squad for the time he was here, especially during the season when we actually did the treble, because I remember Kevin Moran, I think it was, breaking Kenny's jaw in a game at Anfield, and Michael had to fill in and wear the number 7 shirt while Kenny was absent for, I think, a couple of months. And he did a decent job in his absence. You know, and obviously, you know, we still managed to win the 3 trophies even without our talisman.
Do you know what? I'm just trying to work out. He was with us. He only played 30 games for us and scored 6 goals. Yeah. I'll just Google it. But he was with us 83-84, and that's when I was at university.
Right.
And so I only saw him, and I'm trying to work out if he find out if he played. I went to a game at Roker Park, ref by Trelford Mills in about January.
Jesus Christ.
And we played till half time, and then it was postponed at half time because of
in the snow when
icy pitch.
I was on
the orange ball.
Yeah.
I was on the minibus in that game, and it broke down on the way home, and we were stuck. And I only had a denim jacket on, because that was my lucky jacket that I wore to the match. And the
wasn't minibus, lucky that day.
No, the minibus broke down. The minibus broke down on the way back, and we were on the odd shoulder for about bloody 3 hours waiting for and it was absolutely freezing. Honest to God, we were. It's not one of the most memorable away games I ever went to, but yeah. And any of the lads who were with us on that minibus that day will sort of vouch for how cold it was. And we thought we were going to get bloody snowed in. And that's why it took the replacement bus to get there to take us back because of the weather. And then when we got in, we got on the coach. The heating didn't work on the replacement coach, so we couldn't warm up. And it must have taken about another 5 hours to get home. So for the game being called off at half time, I think I got back around about midnight. So it's not one of my favourite away trips, that, Tom. And one more thing before we finish. Don Matteo is 50 today, and he's, according to Mike, he's in New York. So I'm sure we'd all like to wish Don a happy 50th birthday and continued good health. You know what I mean? As he recovers from his illness that we all know about. On that note, we'll end this edition of the Late Flag. Thanks to Tom, Pete and Mike for the contribution today. As he always say, justice for the 97. Don't bite the sun, and you'll never walk alone. And we're back in the week to preview the Tottenham game and talk about our new manager, Arne Slot. Until next time, see you soon.